You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Dr. Ron and Linda on the road again, and this time we're in the Big Apple, New York City.
We are 40 stories up. Quite a view.
And a fantastic view in the Marquee, right?
The Marriott Marquee in the heart of Times Square.
We're looking right down at Times Square right now, and it's a beautiful evening. We had a couple of days of rain and drizzle. But tonight is absolutely fabulous. Had a fantastic dinner. I guess we'll give them a plug.
Oh, you got to give them a plug, because I'll tell you what, you know, just kind of being foodies and traveling all over as we do. And, you know, I mean, we eat out so very much.
But all over the world.
When you get an exceptional, exceptional meal where just every single thing about it is perfect, that's something to talk about.
and that means also the restaurant, the ambiance of the restaurant, and the service by the young lady. I can't remember her name who served us, but it was just fantastic. And it was
Oceana Prime.
And the meal was, we split some double pork chops, right?
No, lamb chops.
Lamb chops and some lobster tails. And we had some truffled French fries.
Parmesan truffle French fries.
Okay, that you picked out. And like you said, it was a fabulous romantic meal. And now we're actually enjoying a very romantic evening. Like you said, up on the 40th floor, looking down over beautiful Times Square, and just about a billion people walking down below us.
Yeah, it's too crazy for me. I mean, those characters that are in Times Square, you know, that are all dressed up in different kinds of costumes. There was one that was dressed up as a baby in a diaper. That kind of was freaky.
That was a little freaky.
But
and had all the superheroes there for the kids and stuff like that. And boy, I'll tell you what, New York, I think many people have said it, but it's the city that does not sleep. And hard to get a bad meal in New York City, especially around Times Square. And we're also in the theater district, right? So we're walking past all the theaters with all the plays, Wicked, Phantom. Chicago's a big deal here right now.
The one that's against Trump. Is
Hamilton. Hamilton. Walked right past that. But it's just beautiful. I don't know if I'm a guy that could take New York City for more than a few days. But
no, a few days is good. A few good meals. And, you know, walking around is great because you can. It's pretty safe out here. There's police everywhere.
And they do such a great job. And I'll tell you what, every single person, Linda, that we have met, from the police to just the people in the stores and the servers, they just couldn't be nicer.
Well, it you know, it's a great few days. We happen to have bucking bulls here, which is why we're here. But what else is here, and who else came from here, is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh, my God. And, you know, as a matter of fact, she is the, as everybody knows, she's the newly elected congresswoman out of Queens, New York. And there's five boroughs in the city of New York, and Queens happens to be one of them. We're in Midtown Manhattan, okay, referred to simply by the people here as midterm. And, you know, I'm walking around with my cowboy hat and all my PBR stuff on, and I kind of feel like, and I'm going to take you back, Linda, to the series called McCloud with Dennis Weaver, who was the police sheriff out of someplace New Mexico. And you know, it's very interesting from people, New Yorkers, to see a bunch of cowboys walking around downtown with all our cowboy stuff on.
Well, but you know what's interesting is that they are quite fascinated by the bucking bulls. And a lot of the people that we've met at the event actually are driving in or flying in, I don't know which, from Maryland. So it seems like they have a big contingent of people that come down to see the bulls. But, you know, we've definitely had a lot of people approach us as stock contractors and, you know, want to ask us a lot of questions. And, you know, they're quite fascinated because this is not their lifestyle here for sure.
Well, you know, this morning we were having breakfast and all of a sudden I got tapped on the shoulder, and here was a nice man And he sounded like a New Yorker from his accent, and he had his little six-year-old boy with him, and they were completely curious about the Bulls. They went to go see the Bulls last night,
right.
And they had all sorts of questions about the Bulls, and I was telling the kid, as was you and the dad, that, hey, look, we have many Bull riders, and they start, you know, just about 7 years old, you know, so that was pretty cool. But anyway, since you brought up Ocasio-Cortez, you know, this woman, I don't know where the heck, you know, she comes from. I think she was a bartender when she got elected, but she has got some of the most ridiculous ideas of where she wants the United States of America to go in the future. Of course, she's part of the new progressive left, and she's actually a you know, full-born member of, I think it's called the Democratic Socialist Association or something like that, but all avowed socialists. And of course, all of her ideas, you know, for America and the platform she ran on is completely the socialist program. The newest thing, and it just seems that every time this woman opens her mouth, she sticks her foot in it and surprises even the people in her own party. Her new thing is to have a 70% tax rate on the rich for people that make over, you know, several million dollars a year. And then it climbs progressively, which is exactly what they have in France. And one of the things that drives people out of France.
Well, she needs to go and look at the yellow jackets.
The yellow vests.
And I'm sure
she doesn't even know what that means.
They're out there protesting. You know, it's so interesting to me, Ron, that these people that come in like this, they want to have a system of government that works nowhere in the world. So rather than taking the best system of government that has worked historically, which is our own, and capitalism, she wants to take it, and so do a number of others. The new Tlaib,
yeah, from Detroit,
yeah.
And I want to talk about
yeah,
her
we
later.
And we will, but they want to take the country backwards to a system that does not work.
Well, like Cuba or
worked.
Venezuela. Okay,
right.
So take a look at all these countries. Take a look at Greece. Take a look at you know, Venezuela, which is probably the most prominent one. Take a look at some of these Central American countries, El Salvador, Cuba, which is far more communist than socialist. Just take a look at all these failing countries, and that's what you want to bring into the United States. So anyway, you know, so Ocasio-Cortez, here's her plan for the American future. First of all, she wants to end all fossil fuels by 2030. Okay, so no more coal production, nothing having anything to do with fossil fuels, or actually even drilling, for God's sakes. And what she wants to do is she wants to force all Americans to use nothing but solar and wind energy. Not only is that five times more expensive than the way we do things here, but when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing, just what the heck are Americans supposed to do? There is no way Americans can pay for that or the United States. So that's number one.
Yeah, and nothing that she has proposed is well thought out, because what she's forgetting on the back end of every single thing that she has proposed is the law of unintended consequences. And you have to think about when you have these idealistic, you know, cloud ideas, what is the reality of that happens from them? And I mean, you and I can see those. I'm sure most of Americans can see those.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, here's another thing that she wants to do. She wants universal free education for everybody. Okay, we just can't simply afford to educate every person in the United States all the way through college and university level. Okay, first of all, not everybody, and you know, as an old division dean and a long-time part-time professor, there are a lot of people in the United States that are not cut out for college and have no business being anywhere around college. The other thing is, college is not the panacea for everybody. As a matter of fact, you know, in my personal opinion, the majority of American colleges are failing their students because they're just not learning anything. And you, Linda, should know more than a lot of people being in the business world, because the people that come in and interview with you are all college graduates. And how are they doing?
Well, they're not prepared for the work world at all. And what, again, what they get in the schools is a lot of theory, but they don't really understand. I mean, they don't even know how to balance a checkbook when they get out. So the practical things that you need to get along in life is not what they get in college. They get just a lot of theory and pie in the sky, a lot of indoctrination, as far as I'm concerned, into liberal politics. But they don't, unless you're in a particular profession, like to be, say, a doctor or something like that, you don't get an education that gives you what you need, truly, to get along in the world. And the whole thing with colleges that just pass you through because you've paid the bill, no matter if you're good at it or not, then, you know, it doesn't do any good. We have gotten away from making people be the best at what they do and rewarding them for being that.
And,
we want everybody to be the same, and everybody is not and never will be the same.
You know, and that's exactly right. And there's been such discouragement over, I would say, about the last 30 years or so on the trades. They're trying to, you know, everybody was trying to push everybody into college, go get a college degree, get involved in computer science and programming and all this. Not that those things aren't important. However, what has happened is that now those jobs are outsourced. And so all these people that have these degrees in these, you know, techie areas, all that stuff is now in Indonesia. It's in other countries because the dot-com companies and anything having to do with tech, by and large, the majority of that has moved out of the United States and it needs to return. And by the way, that's what President Trump's trying to do with these tax incentives to bring these countries, you know, back in these companies. And not countries, but, you know, back into the United States. With, you know, speaking about education, one of the things that Ocasio-Cortez has forwarded that she would like as legislation is just absolving all these kids that got their degrees from their student loans. That's about $1.3 trillion, by the way, that would be, you know, borne by the American taxpayer. There's just no way that you could do that. Another thing is she wants to change housing and turn it into a right for all Americans. And I don't know if people really understand what that means. If she makes it, she wants to make it as a constitutional right. That means that if people did not get housing, you know, government-subsidized housing, that would be discriminatory and people could get sued for that. And so literally every single person in the United States, regardless of legality, illegality in this country, socioeconomic status, it just doesn't even matter, they would get some type of residence, an apartment, a condominium, a residence, whatever. And who's going to pay for that?
Well, and who's going to pay for that is right. So let's say that the government pays for that. Of course, we cannot possibly pay for all the things that she's put forth, which is why she wants to increase the taxes on everybody. But if you gave everybody a house, whether they deserved it or not, again, everything that she has put forth just takes the incentive away from anybody, from people like you and I, from people like our friends, from people that work and make themselves successful and employ others and do good things in society and in the world. You take away any incentive to do that. So if you were a property owner and you owned, say, apartment houses, you would never want to be in that position. You would never want to, you know, have a place where people don't have to pay, because then they don't respect the property, and they don't, it's not theirs, they don't care, they're going to get it anyway, and you're just going to create a whole nightmare. I do agree that we should have some method of you know, helping out these all these people that are living on the streets. But the truth is, a lot of these people choose to live on the streets, and that is their choice, and it is their life, and they can make those choices if they choose to. But you cannot de-incentivize people to be successful, because we would fall into, I mean, we would just go the way that Rome went. We would fall apart.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, I worked with the homeless for years when I worked for the San Jose Police Department, and I had to do studies as the department's, you know, so-called criminologist at the time, because nobody else understood how to do this type of research, and so they picked on me. And you're absolutely right. And this is really the disconnect with the American public, because, you know, you said, well, these people choose to live out in the street. And the people that are uninformed, uneducated in homelessness would say, well, that's pure malarkey. Why would people choose to live on the street? You would be surprised what people choose to do. Okay, because we had, at least in our city, and I've been to other cities and done similar, you know, projects, they have missions, they have beds, they have showers, they have all these nice things for the homeless, and there is absolutely that segment of the homeless that will not participate in their programs because they want to do whatever they want to do. And what does that mean? They want to take drugs, they want to, you know, they want to sell drugs, they want to do all these different things. And when you are in these managed facilities that provide you with, you know, with three hots and a cot and showers and good hygiene, they don't want to do it. They don't want to participate in that because they have to follow the rules in places like that. Just like people have to follow the rules in government subsidized housing. And look at the, you know, the crime that we have in government subsidized housing projects. I mean, New York City is an outstanding example. All the big cities in the world that you and I, or not the world, but in the United States that you and I travel to, we see the same darn thing. You know, and in speaking of increases, again, of course, Ocasio-Cortez wants universal health care, universal Medicare, and everybody paying for it. And I'll tell you what, you could charge 110% taxes on the rich, and there's no way that you would be able to fund all of the things that she wants to fund in her idealistic leftist world.
No, and what she should be addressing that would help Americans much more is, rather than addressing giving everybody everything, let's address the mental health issues of people that are on the street, because a lot of people that are on the street because of mental health issues.
That's exactly right.
And if we address those, we would solve a big part of the problem, and that the problems that we would solve by addressing those are, you know, like a spider web. They go all over. You would also be addressing, say, active shooters. You would be addressing drugs. You'd be addressing a lot of different things by addressing mental health.
Well, you know, here's one of the problems that I see with Cortez is she's a freshman congressperson, but she has no life experience at all. Okay, she is a very lucky person. She used to be a bartender in New York. I mean, that was her career, and she knows nothing about the outside world. She knows nothing about economics, about socioeconomics, about crime, or anything, but she continues to open up her mouth, which is her absolute First Amendment right to do so. But for God's sakes, you know, think before you speak, and if you don't, you're going to do nothing but look stupid and keep your foot in your mouth and obstruct, and you're not going to do anything for the people that voted for you or the American people. How about a cup of hot tea?
You got it.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Well, you know, speaking of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have you been following sort of the Twitter feeds between her and Louisiana Representative Steve Scalise, who got shot back in June of last year?
Oh, I have.
In regards to these discussions about her 70% tax increase proposal?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What do you think about that? I mean, and what I mean by that is that, you know, she's got such a radical following. And, you know, so Steve Scalise has been talking with her very professionally, you know, as one, congressional person to another, and saying, you know, here are some of the problems that I have with your proposal, you know, that we just talked about, and the 70% increase. And what is happening between her and her followers started tweeting back to Scalise, about Scalise, hey, you know, you need to snipe that guy, or that guy needs to be sniped, I think referring, of course, to shooting him. And somebody said, why don't you kick that cane out from under him, because obviously he's been severely wounded and he's, you know, back on the mend, and he walks around with a cane. And there have just been some just disgusting, very unprofessional remarks made, to the point where Scalise said, okay, I've had it. That's the end. I'm not going to carry on this conversation on Twitter. We'll converse during the congressional hearings. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's disgusting. The entire sort of culture of this Congress that has just recently come in is just very sad to me. It's not what we should be looking at. The first thing that they want to do, and their entire agenda, is putting the screws to the American people again, and doing whatever they can to investigate, intimidate, block, obstruct, or impeach President Trump.
You know, where is the professionalism and the ethics and the civility in some of these new Congress people, coming into the Congress? And I think, of course, the bad role models that I look to are, you know, some of the people that have been there forever, you know, the dinosaurs like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and a couple of these other guys that have just made such ridiculous and sometimes very disgusting remarks, you know, about the President of the United States. And then you get someone like the newly elected, you know, Congress freshman, Rashida Tlaib, who's out of Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
And she, I think she's in a bar with a bunch of her supporters, and she's given a speech, and she makes a very vile, insulting comment. I won't even repeat it to you, but you know what it is.
Sure.
The MF word about a President Trump. And then you take a look at Ocasio-Cortez, and she doubles down. So when the President of the United States suggests to Tlaib, hey, you know, your comments are embarrassing, they're highly offensive, and they're unworthy, okay, of your family, of you, and of the people of the United States, Ocasio-Cortez doubles back down on the President of the United States and makes some, you know, equally vile comments about him. And then when Nancy Pelosi who's the Speaker of the House now, brand new Speaker of the House again, she's asked by the media, what do you think about that? She supports Tlaib in her comments.
She said it's not her responsibility to police their words.
Oh, that's
crap.
Well,
it absolutely is, because she was policing everybody's words when they were against Obama. But even, you know, when I think back to when Obama was president, had the Republicans spoken about him in these ways, they would have just been castigated, and we would have all been called racist, because it would only have to do with race that we would say something like that. But this, these people that are supposed to be the people that are the all accepting, you know, all inclusive, tolerant people, are the least of that. Here's the disgust, though. As an American, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. As an American, I expect us as Americans to elect people to go in there, and that agenda should have been one to work for the American people. That's what should have been on the table. Instead of that being on the table, the only thing that's on the table is obstruction and
impeachment
and investigations. And this moves any of us nowhere. And you know what? I'm upset with the American people, Ron. I'm upset with the people in Queens. I'm upset with the people in Michigan who vote for people like this. What are they thinking? What do you want America to be? Is this seriously what you want? Do you know your history?
You know, I agree entirely with you. In my position, sounds a lot like yours. I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, a socialist, a communist, whatever. You all have a right in this country. We all have a right to be able to express ourselves and what we see the vision of America is. But that's a conversation. Okay, that's a conversation. When people like Tlaib or Ocasio-Cortez or anybody else for that matter, you know, leave the arena of civil conversation, discussion with regards to legislation and policy, and they get into, you know, serious name calling, that's when the leaders of their party need to take these freshmen or anybody else aside and say, you know, that's where you have a cup of coffee in a closed room, and basically, you know, you set them up for a drive-by slapping, and you say, look, this stuff, you leave that stuff at home. Go leave that in a bar, but don't bring it into the halls of Congress.
Right.
Don't bring it into the Senate, because it gets us nowhere.
And do you know who I respect for saying that? Is Democrat Joe Manchin. Manchin came on the news and said, no, this is absolutely wrong. And he said all the things you just said. You don't bring this into Congress.
And, you know, and I'm glad he said that. I wasn't aware of that because, you know, I'm no fan of Joe Manchin. But somebody has to be an adult in the room. Okay, someone has to say, look, when you start, you haven't even started 2019. You just got elected. This was the first day Tlaib had been in office, the very first day, and she starts out like this. Where do you think that's going to go? Do you think that's going to resonate with Republicans? Do you think that's going to resonate with the President of the United States? Do you think that's going to resonate with the American people in toto, in the flyover states? And, you know, we're not talking about the ridiculous left and West Coasts, which are the same. We're talking about the vast majority of good, hardworking, taxpaying Americans that want this country to move forward.
And we want them to stop regulating every single thing that we do and stop stealing our drive and our ambition and our ability to create jobs and do good things for America. Instead, you want to take that away from us. So you want me to continue to work 14 hours a day and build a company and support people and have them support their families who then support their families. And you want to take that all away. And you want to take everything that we earn and give it to somebody who could care less about working. Who, you know, these people are naive. They don't understand the way that the world works. Truthfully, they live in a bubble that makes no sense to me, and they don't really understand how people work, and they don't know their history in the world of what happens when you have these kinds of policies.
Exactly, and they forward the type of educational system that we have now that completely skirts history. There's no discussion of civics anymore. These kids and adults now don't know anything about, you know, I mean, you and I have had so many coffee conversations about this. But, you know, here's something on a bright note in regards to where the United States of America is right now with respect to our economy. So it is far from the doldrums that the Democrats talk about. As a matter of fact, the new job numbers just came out for December of 2018, and actually this is amazing, because even the economic pundits didn't think we'd get over 150,000 jobs in December. Okay, we got 312,000 jobs were created in December. So, you know, over twice as much as the, you know, economic pundits thought we were going to get. All right, and we had a job growth for 2018, which was 3.2, and that is the highest surge in job growth in 10 years, in a decade. And unemployment rate at dropping at 3.9, which is absolutely fantastic. So I know the stock market did some hiccups towards the end of the year, but people have, you know, and it went down and it dropped.
It's still at a higher level than it's ever been in history.
Exactly. And, you know, the people, and that's why I don't play with the stock market, because it's really arbitrary and capricious. It is, people don't seem to understand that the stock market is really no longer controlled by people that are buying and selling. It's controlled by computers and algorithms.
Oh, it definitely is.
Okay. And when you allow, you know, artificial intelligence and algorithms to control, you know, the future of the American economy with regards to our stock market, that is a fool's game. Because you could literally take a monkey and put him in a cage and give him a coin and let him flip that coin, you know, heads or tails to whether you were going to buy and sell, and do no better and probably worse than these artificial intelligence algorithms. So let me just say that according to our economic index, and now everything that we can prove, that we can document right now, the 2018 year experienced a huge year for manufacturing and manufacturers, and in fact, the best year for manufacturers that the United States of America has experienced in 21 years.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else that's happening economically that I think ultimately is a good thing. So in my business, we just were noticed that, you know, we can expect prices to go up from China quite a bit because we have the tariffs, but also their economy has stayed stagnant. So in 2018, the Chinese economy
had zero growth.
So that's a big deal to them.
Oh.
And the reason that they had zero growth, in my opinion, and I'm not an economist, but as Ron would say, I stayed in a Holiday Inn once. But,
or a Marriott.
But the kind of the back and forth between President Trump and China has been very interesting, even though a lot of people castigated Trump for this. I've totally agreed with what he's done. And even though I'm one of the people paying those tariffs, I absolutely agree that I want these products made in America, or I want these tariffs off. So now that you see that we are growing and they are stagnating,
which means
President Xi is taking this very seriously.
Yes.
And it's going to come to some agreement that is better for all of us. And this is Trump's plan, and he knows what he's doing here. And, you know, if we did not have him, if we had any other career politician as president that would have gotten elected, they would not have understood this.
No,
so I'm very happy that we got President Trump. And the other one thing that I want to say is every day, every single day, I can't be more amazed at the Trump, what do they call it? The whole
dysfunction, Trump.
Well, the whole thing that where people just are so insane about having this guy as our president, and they
Trump
think he's
derangement syndrome.
That, and that they think that, you know, that it's so terrible. I just show me what is terrible, because I'm certainly not seeing it as an American. And honestly, as we go across this country, neither's anybody else that we talk to, except for the media.
You know, and that's what it is, and it's all the media, and it's the people that are uninformed and uneducated. And of course, you know, business is your wheelhouse. It's nowhere near my wheelhouse like it is for yours. But you know, when Trump said, "Let me negotiate this. We're going to put some heavy tariffs on these people. It's going to hurt a little bit. But once we rip the Band-Aid off, it's going to get a lot better. So hold fast." And of course, some of the, you know, economic pundits and of course the mainstream media, they're running around like Chicken Little, you know, saying, "Oh my God, the sky isn't falling. The sky is falling." No, Trump has been 100% right. When I saw the new news that China had stagnated, especially with zero growth, and our economy, from everything we see in 2018. Is extremely robust now that we're moving into 2019 and we're solidly in 2019. Trump was right. And, you know, I don't know a heck of a lot about, you know, what China's doing with their money, but I know that they've spent billions and billions and billions of dollars, you know, gearing up their military infrastructure to, you know, because they're in the South China Sea and they're pushing here,
right,
and they're pushing there.
Well, they're having,
you know,
an argument with their occupation.
Well, exactly, yeah. Because, you know, they want strategic global dominance, but that comes at a price, okay? And so everything that Trump is doing right now with regards to how we're handling China, I'm completely in favor of, and I just wish more people would be more educated in these issues. Look, I don't care if you don't like the guy, all right? Yeah, you know, he does things that tick me off from time to time. But am I very happy with the way he's running this country? I'm absolutely happy, and I know you are as a business person.
Yeah, I am.
Well, listen, let me bring up one more thing, because now, you know, we're talking about politics. Are you aware of about the new legislation that's being proposed? It's actually a constitutional amendment that's been proposed by Florida Republican, you know, Congressperson Francis Rooney and our Texas Senator Ted Cruz, in regards to limiting the terms for both the Congress people and the Senate. Have you heard anything about this?
Well, I knew that was coming. I haven't heard about this new one, but I'm all for it.
Well, let me tell you just a little bit what it is. And, you know, it's also it's co-sponsored by Marco Rubio, of course, the Republican out of Florida, and Mike Lee, another Republican out of Utah, and David Perdue, a Republican out of Georgia. And what they're talking about is creating a constitutional amendment to set term limits, 3 terms for Congress and 2 terms for the Senate. So I think that's pretty important. I know Americans want term limits for all of our, you know, federal politicians. We have term limits on our president. It only goes to, you know, fair that we have term limits on our other branches of government, like, you know, our senators and our congressmen. And I know even our founding fathers never planned for people to be in Congress or the Senate for as many years as we see the Pelosi's and the Schumer's ad nauseum, you know, in politics. So I'll just leave it like that, and I'm going to get our last cup of tea.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Well, before I get on to some things about de-stressing yourself, you know, I want to say that one more thing about President Trump, and what I do agree with is, you know, his stance on the wall. We need the wall, and historically, walls work. They worked all the way from the Middle Ages, when we had walls around the castles, and still a lot of those walls are still standing in Europe, as we just saw. But walls work in other countries as well.
Yeah, you know, one of the best walls that I've ever seen is the Vatican, the wall around the Vatican, which is actually its own country. Okay, yeah. It's his own sovereign nation. They've got like a 40 or 50 foot wall. It must be 18 feet thick.
And interesting that the Pope is not so much for our wall, isn't it?
No, well, it's just, the Pope is a politician. Okay, he happens to be a religious guy, but he is a politician and he has his own country.
He needs to take his wall down. He doesn't want us to have a wall. I mean, come on.
Well, I know. I like looking at it. It's historic. It's beautiful. But anyway, you're completely right. One of the things that we found in Hungary is that when they put up their wall, they stopped all their illegal immigration 100%. Not 95%, 100%. And then there's the wall between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and that's the kind of wall, in my personal opinion, for a lot of the places where we can actually have a wall, that's a 30-foot concrete, what we call a tilt-up. So it's straight up. Nobody's going anywhere. Nobody's climbing that wall whatsoever. And they say that that has cut down on illegal immigration, but especially terrorism, completely.
Sure. And you take people like President Obama, who at one point talked a lot about having a wall and how we need a wall, but now that he's not the president, he's talking that we don't need the wall. Well, if you go over to President Obama's new $8 million residence, he not only has a wall, he has lots of walls. He has not just the wall, but he has barricades, armed guards. His streets are blocked off. He's got a 10-foot wall. He's got multiple cement and iron barricades, even blocking the road leading up to his residence.
Well, I wouldn't like to be one of his neighbors. You imagine what you have to go through being, one of former President Obama's neighbors and trying to go through all that crap?
But, how do you do that for yourself? And then you tell the people along the border in Texas, Arizona, California, that they can't block all these people who come across onto their properties and, cause havoc and just cause havoc to all of us in the United States in so many different ways. So I agree. I hope President Trump stands absolutely firm on the wall. And I want every inch of that wall built.
Well, I'll say a couple of things because I know you want to talk to me about a couple of other things. But one thing that really bothers me is that we constantly get our Border Patrol agents up in front of the cameras and they are telling the American public that we need a wall and all the reasons why we need a wall. And, of course, those are the men and women that protect our safety and security of our sovereign nation. And they know what's best. I mean, they see it every day. They live it every day. They experience the risks. They see the tragedy. They see these people, hundreds of these people, trying to breach the wall at the same time. There's a lot of bad things that are going on at that wall. And they are saying, look, we absolutely need to have a wall. And then you get the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, the Ocasio-Cortez's, the Tlaib's. I mean, you name it. And they're telling us that, America is safe and we don't need this wall whatsoever. It's all politics. And the thing, and I'll just leave it at this because it's just a thing that consistently bothers me. They don't want a wall for two reasons. Number one, they want to deny President Trump his primary campaign promise of building a wall to secure America's sovereignty and our safety. And number two, it's for politics because they know that every single person who is an illegal alien that crosses into this country has an opportunity for amnesty and voting, and it's about votes. So they want to risk the safety and the sovereignty of the United States of America and all of our citizens so that they can have the vote, so they can assume power. And that is about as un-American an idea and a political posture as I can think of. And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, one more thing I want to mention that, I knew that this was happening, but I think it was maybe in the back of my mind. But in December, there was a hearing in the House on the Clinton Foundation. And, Judicial Watch has been really on that, and so has some people in the FBI, and so have some financial experts. And really what they have found with the Clinton Foundation, I don't know what's going to happen with it, is that they said that it's really not a charitable organization, but in point of fact was a closely held family partnership, and that it was acting as an agent of foreign governments early in its life and throughout its existence. So I think that that's really interesting.
Well, you know, I know it's true, Linda, because if you take a look at the serious drop in income since the 2016 election.
Oh, sure.
So the Clinton Foundation was making hundreds of millions of dollars, okay, in anticipation of Hillary Clinton getting elected president of the United States, and now it's gone down to just a few million dollars a year. So from hundreds of millions of dollars to a few million dollars a year, to me that's quid pro quo. That's pay to play.
Well, they're saying that the Clinton Foundation owes from $400 million to $2.5 billion in taxes, as it was not even entitled to its 501(c) taxes exempt privileges. So, you know, the question is, how much more is the FBI going to do on this, and are they actually going to, you know, press charges? Because according to some people, the Clintons need to be in jail over this, that it was not a true foundation for the purpose of charity.
Well,
so I'm going to follow that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm very pessimistic about that, because the Clintons are part of the ruling elite, and they are the untouchables. And even with a brand new attorney general, I don't know if anybody's going to touch him for anything. And that's one of my primary arguments and frustrations about the swamp that needs to be drained.
Well, and there is a swamp. But, you know, let's talk about some other things that people, you know, especially towards the beginning of the year, towards the end of the year, towards the very beginning of the year, people are getting stressed. I mean, obviously the Trump derangement people are really stressed. So I want to talk about some of the worst things that you can do for your own mental health, and maybe some ideas that, you know, you can have that would make things better. So usually things like depression are kind of brought on by, they could be brought on by anything. They could be brought on by job changes, life changes, health changes, family changes. But things that you do in your life can either make those things better or aggravate them, right? So here's some ideas for you, Ron.
Because you know I'm completely stressed.
Well, I know you certainly were yesterday.
Oh,
so
let's... I won't even go there.
So one of the things that people do that can actually change their whole outlook, which is interesting, is if you slouch when you walk. Okay, if you make a point of standing up straight, it just gives you a lift, both literally and figuratively.
I learned that from my mom. She would not allow slouching, bad posture in the house whatsoever. So I can guarantee you, when you see me walking around, you never see me slouch.
Yeah, and another thing that people do now, which is really interesting, because if you looked at this same kind of a study done 10 years ago, it would have been completely different things. But now, because of the world that we're in, one of the things that you do that kind of aggravates your stress is taking pictures of everything on your phone. Take pictures of everything. Oh, like food pictures, Ron.
Now, you... We had such a great meal tonight that you took pictures of food.
So I took one picture.
Don't you dare point at me, okay?
I did, because I had to send it to my sister.
Because that was a fabulous dinner.
Yeah,
okay?
Because that was exceptional. But normally I would never take pictures of food. But
don't you throw stones at me, young lady.
You know, and here's an interesting difference, because you and I are different about this. You take a lot of pictures, and I take very few pictures. And I like to capture things in my mind, and you like to capture them on film, so to say. And I notice this as we're at the Bucking Bulls, is that you're taking a lot of pictures of the Bucking Bulls. Now, I notice when I take pictures, I don't actually see the bull buck because I'm so busy taking pictures. And I want that experience of seeing the bull buck. So that is what this particular study says, is that you lose something when you take a lot of pictures.
Okay, now I don't disagree with that, but let me help you with a tip, okay? I look through the camera, but I have learned to keep my eyes open and not focused on the camera. Okay, it's the same thing like teaching someone to shoot a gun. So once I'm on sight of what I need to focus on, I don't focus on the camera because I know I've got the targeted image there. I look through it and the camera doesn't even exist anymore. So I do get to experience everything. Okay, so that's maybe something that you, but it's a practiced art. You know, I learned it in forensics, in forensic photography. I look through it, okay? So just that you know, I've got it in my mind as well as on the camera.
And another thing that people report, so in the workplace, about 35% of people report that they have been bullied in the workplace. And I absolutely believe that because there are a lot of bullies out there. And even more, even though the study doesn't address it, I will tell you, just from having it happen to our daughter, there's a lot of bullying in schools, right? So one of the things, and that can really stress you, and one of the things is to do what you need to do reporting-wise and health-wise to eliminate that bullying situation. So that's one of the suggestions. Another thing that you can do that increases your stress is not to exercise. So exercise is definitely a really good way to release some of that stress.
And you know, and that, of course, like millions of other Americans, you know, I think it's the number one or number two, you know, New Year's resolution. We absolutely have to do that. We have to stop running around with our hair on fire all the time and you know, take time to exercise. Okay, so let me point something out. So we came here and we knew they had a gym here, all right, and it's, I don't know, 20 floors below us, but there's a gym, and we brought workout clothes, and we've been here for a couple of days. Have we done one single workout?
No, but you know,
we have walked a lot of walking
all around this town.
We haven't taken a cab. We've been walking
exactly
many blocks to go back and forth between Madison Square Garden and going to the restaurant and stuff, so I'm proud of us there. I've been following us on Pacer, and we're actually doing, you know, a couple of miles a day, so I'm not too unhappy about that.
And that's why I didn't worry about the gym, because when I saw that we had the ability to walk pretty long distances to going back and forth to work. Of course, there was a long distance I did walk to get a cookie, but because the cookies were exceptional. But exercising is important to releasing stress. Every time you exercise, it takes about 6% of your stress away.
Oh, that's good to know. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Linda.
Yeah, another big stressor that we can avoid is procrastination.
Oh, that's a huge thing with me.
It's a huge stressor.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're going to procrastinate, it just builds up that stress.
And let me speak personally for just a second, because I'm so glad you brought that up, because it is one of my New Year's resolutions to stop procrastinating, because it does create stress. Okay, when I put something off, I know I've got to do it, but I put it off usually because I don't want to do it. But when I end up getting close to the time that I have to do it, absolutely increases stress. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I will verify that.
Yeah, and you know, there's some ways to mitigate that, but I
like doing some, it.
Yeah,
like doing it.
Yes,
when you're
by doing it. I mean, I'm more of a take it head on, because I want to get it over with.
Yes, and you are. You're totally different than me in that
respect.
Yeah,
you know, not that one is more right and more wrong, but one causes more stress. You know, another big stressor is people that stay in a toxic relationship, and oh my gosh, there's so many toxic relationships. Sometimes I don't know why are you together? You know, you get this one life to live, and there's not one right person for everybody. There's lots of right people. So find one of those instead of staying in a toxic relationship.
You know, and let me add something to that. And it's something that you and I have done a couple of times during our relationship. You know, when we met, you know, I had been in a toxic relationship and, you know, I needed to get out of it. And I did, thank God. And meeting you was a huge incentive to do that when I found out what a wonderful person you were. But you know what? When you and I got together and when we got married, one of the things that we decided to do is divest ourselves of those people around us that were negative and were toxic.
Absolutely.
And when we did that, boy, that really, and we've done that a couple of times over all the years, you know, get some more toxic people, let's get rid of them. And that has always been a great decision because it removed a lot of stress of you and me.
Well, and it, yes, and toxic people can come in all varieties. They can be family members, they can be friends, they can be relatives, they can be right. workplace people. But it doesn't mean that you have to never speak to them again.
No,
it just means that you minimize your contact with them and minimize the relationship and focus on people that bring you happiness and move you forward in life and bring you up rather than down.
Yeah, you just kind of push them down through your Rolodex file and you move them out of the, you know, like what they said on Analyze This, you know, the circle of trust. You move them out of that circle of trust and you move them down your Rolodex file and they're not, you know, they're not a primary friend or associate, and that really does help out.
Yep. And another way that we stress ourselves is by taking life too seriously. You know, we need to learn to laugh at ourselves. There's so many things in life that are not so serious. You know, if you, and this one fits me, you know, you trip over a crack in the sidewalk and, you know, you're like, oh, woe is me. When I trip over a crack, I laugh hysterically at myself because it's funny. And, you know, we need, and you know what? This reminds me of Ron. You know how they're, like, making fun of Seinfeld and everything right now that, you know, oh, my gosh, they said this and that. Let's not take ourselves that seriously. Life is funny. Let's laugh at it.
It is. And by the way, as a person that got every single episode of Seinfeld as a present, that was one of the all-time greatest comedy shows ever. And there was nothing, you know, bad about that show whatsoever.
So, yeah. And here's a couple more. So if you don't get enough sleep, that's a big stressor. You have to get enough sleep. Not being alone ever, that's a big stressor. Take some time to be alone with yourself, like yourself, read a book, comate, you know, just relax with yourself. And then talk to people rather than just doing the texting thing and so forth on the phone. Too much cell phone stuff.
Yeah, be more engaged. Be more engaged with people.
Yeah, you've got to be able to live without that mobile phone in your face every minute.
That's true.
And you know that those are really just some things to help us de-stress for 2019.
Well, we've got one more day in the Big Apple, and then we're back to Texas, and going to watch our Bulls buck tomorrow afternoon. And hopefully they're going to be doing as good as they've been doing in the couple of days that we've been here.
And I'm going to de-stress a little bit right now and go to sleep.
And you know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to just leave because we're up so high and it's so beautiful. I'm going to leave our windows open so we can look out on the lights of
all
New
the cement
York City.
Out there. It's
no,
beautiful.
There's some lights. There's lights and stuff out there. Okay, sweetheart. And I'm just going to wish you a good night.